Problem Say That, the podcast where your big questions get real answers. My name is Matt King. I'm your host here in the city of Chicago. Joining us here is Jeb Brewer.
Serving size, one episode.
With us all the way from Rochester, Tennessee, Lee Younger.
All of the red blinking buttons are working.
That's right. We had a minor technical difficulty before the show. And by technical difficulty, I mean I forgot to click the big button that says record at the top of the recording software.
You know, I mean, it's technicalities.
We've only been doing this for 13 years or so. There's still nuances that are lost on me, like the big red blinking button.
The one that's literally called record.
Yeah. Well, we've got a great show lined up. We got some of your fine questions. But first, I must declare a really, really stupid emergency.
Oh, that's my favorite kind.
Wow. Yep.
So I'm going to give you the tweet on this, because I think it just sums it up, and then we'll go into some details here. This is a tweet from Julie Roys, a reporter covering this. It says, Missouri pastor at John Lindell accused disgraced pastor at Mark Driscoll of, quote, sowing disunity and urged Driscoll to publicly repent. Lindell alleged Driscoll had contacted his son and urged him to oust his parents and brother from church leadership.
Wow.
This is some real Game of Thrones if it was on PureFlix.
Wait, okay. Game of Thrones, if it was on PureFlix, that is an avenue that we could really make some hay with.
Yeah, man, I'm here for that. That's exactly the kind of weird nonsense that gets me going.
Okay. Here we go.
Please.
What are the houses in a PureFlix, like a Christian like denomination or you know, different offices in the Christian faith, in the church or something like that? Like, what are the houses that would be vying for the throne?
Well, I mean, we could just use denominational names. Some of them feel kind of vaguely medieval, like, you know, the House Presbyterian. Like, that feels like, you know, like,
yeah, they've already got, you know, sigils and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. House Episcopalian.
Episcopalian sounds great.
I mean, it kind of is from a medieval whatnot, well, early modern whatnot anyway, so.
House Absolutely. Orthodox, you may not sit while we are in session.
Oh, that's very good. That's yep. very, very good. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a Holy Roman Empire, so we've got, you know, we've got a lot to work with here. This is great.
I think there's a lot going on here that's very, very good. Yeah, you can do the little map.
Yeah.
Kind of the Lutherans have the upper Midwest and Baptist hegemony through the South, but then there's breakoff groups that, are they still technically Baptist? Because they took it off the sign.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Would we have actual dragons? And if not, what is our stand-in for dragons?
I think there are dragons, but because they're a little on the creationist side, they rebrand them as Leviathans.
Oh,
oh, that's good. That's good, Matt, because I almost said Marsha Blackburn, so that was really good. You saved us there.
She's the mother of something. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this is gonna follow along the real story. I don't want to give too many details. I feel like that tweet was so beautiful, but it does kind of capture in with the Game of Thrones theme, because, you know, in such shows and stories, there's great political intrigue, but then there's also just kind of petty nonsense.
Sure.
Lindell's comments follow a public dispute between him and Driscoll at the Stronger Men's Conference last weekend.
Oh, my. Ooh.
Concerning a controversial performance by sword swallower Alex Magala. Driscoll
what?
Called the performance a strip act exhibiting the spirit of Jezebel, which prompted Lindell to stop Driscoll's message, yelling, "You're done."
Dude, can I just pause for a second?
Sure.
Can you assure me that you didn't just make all that up? Because that's a level of completely out there that, man, that strains the bounds of credulity.
Well, Jed, I can send you the link to julieroys.com. You can also look at the video for yourself if you are so inclined, but yeah.
Okay, but if I view the video, I might get consumed by the Jezebel spirit. I can't risk that.
Well, that's a risk you take when you go to any website, really. r/Jezebel spirits is a dangerous place to be. So yeah, I want to be clear about this. There was a sword swallower at the Stronger Men's Conference who apparently also did some level of acrobatic something in his act and was dressed in a way that Mark Driscoll declared having the spirit of Jezebel, which prompted the guy, the megachurch dude who was overseeing this, to cut Driscoll off and yell, "You're done."
This has been quite a sentence already.
It has been. Then, apparently, the, disgraced, I guess it would be like a kind of a disgraced mercenary or cultic leader, Mark Driscoll, is now trying to sow disunion in this other family in Missouri, great stronghold of wealth and fabulousness. Apparently calls the kid, who I assume is the associate pastor, because that's the way megachurches work, and tries to get him to overthrow the parents for their embracing of the Jezebel spirit. This is like, this is like 2 degrees of rewrite off a bad Game of Thrones remake.
Yeah. You know, one of my nephews recently and accurately described to me as saying, my uncle really likes chaos. And he's right. And this is a perfect example. Like this is my jam right here. This is must see TV for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm trying to come up with a name, and Game of Pulpits is what I'm on currently.
Game of Pews.
Ooh, that's very good.
Yeah.
The Iron Pew. I feel like that would exist in some churches.
Just who amongst you is strong enough to preach the iron pulpit?
Yeah.
It's a pew that's made up of hymnals that have been fused together.
Oh, that's very good.
I was thinking like maybe the journal or the kind of the moleskin of every intern and associate pastor and pastoral assistant and children's volunteer who's been run off by how awful it is to work here. They get into the pulpit.
I've got it. It's a throne that's made up of all those ludicrous aluminum plates that they pass during the offering.
Oh.
At all of those churches. Because we all know that's what we're really here for.
Yeah. Wow, man. If I had the power to greenlight a TV series, I would be greenlighting this right now.
Yeah. And let's not forget the inciting incident being another disgraced lord, guy who used to have a little kingdom until everyone booted him out, and he's now has to be intransigent and travel. And he gets invited to the court of another noble. And makes fun of the local entertainment to the point that he is cast out and embarrassed.
Okay, do either of you have the fluency to be able to give us like a classic Game of Thrones quote, but in like a ludicrous Christian sense?
Like with like a Southern preacher accent, like the, you know, direct quote from the script?
I don't know about direct quote from the script. I'm talking about more of like moving that quote, you know, changing some of the nouns to make it like a Christian American Christianity thing.
Let's see here. I've made it through about like episode 4 of Game of Thrones, and I was like, this is grim. And then I didn't have HBO for a while, and then I watched like the last 2 episodes with no other context because that seemed hilarious, and it was. I was like, wow,
it's incredible.
That guy was a tree or whatever. So I don't really know, but I'm pulling up an article about the most iconic Game of Thrones quotes.
There you go. Let's do this.
Well, this one kind of could work unaltered. if you ever call me sister again, I'll have you strangled in your sleep. That's like very, wow. You got too familiar too quick with the church matriarch.
Yeah.
You were like, Sister Patricia, can I just grab something out of the kitchen there?
You ever called me sister again?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
A lot of these are about incest, so that's not going to really work.
Two on the nose, Matt.
Yeah.
Too ham-fisted with that one.
Now, this one, okay, so this one I assume is a Rich backstory, but it's said by the Charles Dance character, like the kind okay. of august, you know.
Yeah, from Phantom of the Opera, right.
Yeah, which is great. Any man who must say, I am the king, is no true king. You can just swap out king for pastor in there, and that's going to...
That's what I'm talking about, man. Fantastic.
This is similar, a certain amount of reading. This would apply to a lot of Old Testament stories. If you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention.
we need no go no further. That's fantastic.
That could apply to some sermon series.
Oh, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, and the rest of these are mostly about stabbing or the aforementioned incest, which maybe if we had enough time, we could fill that back in, but not on the fly. But
all that to say, this is some rich and fertile ground. We're talking about a group of individuals that are incredibly territorial, incredibly yeah. competitive, and incredibly over the top.
Yeah.
About how important this thing is they are doing.
And again, the important thing they were doing was the Stronger Men's Conference at a church in suburban Missouri. apparently, this gentleman with the sword swallowing, he doesn't act. Driscoll likened Magala's act at the conference to a pole dancing routine. Lindell told his congregation that Magala's performance was more of an acrobatic act. Lindell also contended that Magala had become a Christian and was participating in worship at every opportunity. And I actually read a thing at the time. So, yeah, apparently this is a guy who was some kind of, he did this stuff before and he got saved. And he's like trying to do his art, performance art, such as it is in a Christian context. And I'm looking at a picture in the article here. And dude is jacked. Like, dude okay. is like 12-pack ripped. Okay. So if you're going to be at the Stronger Men's Conference, I don't think your complaint could be one of the guys on stage has too many abs. I'm just saying.
Well, it's very on brand.
Yeah.
Like, what did you think you were signing up for?
Yeah. But maybe you thought you were getting the power team and it was going to be all 320-pound dudes ripping phone books apart. But some people are, you know, built for speed.
Look, Matt, as a believer in Jesus, I can't go past a 6-pack. I can't go to a 12-pack. That's just not right.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a text to David Lindell on Saturday night, that's the Sun, Driscoll reportedly referred to some of Magala's recent social posts. He posted James River on his social with your gals, gay porn stripper, period, Jezebel, period. Look, the misogyny is very deep when you're referring to men as Jezebels, I think. Or is that progressive? I can't tell. Is that equal opportunity to call a dude a Jezebel?
Wow. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot.
I mean, like 13 years ago, we made up beef with Driscoll on this podcast. At this point,
true.
He's right. Just his own punchline.
Yeah, at some point you lapse into self-parody. Speaking of self-parody, I'm assuming this picture is from the conference, but Mr. Driscoll wore on stage was a black baseball cap with the words "Real Men" written on it in white.
Oh,
okay.
I don't know what that means.
Wow.
Spirit of Jezebel. Wow. I don't, look, I send text messages and some of them are stupid. Some of them intentionally so, I'm sure some less so, but you get so worked up that a dude had his shirt off on a stage that you find yourself typing Spirit of Jezebel to someone who's also a pastor to try to get them to kick off a revolution. And at no point do you think, am I some kind of clown?
Personally, I'm viewing Driscoll's words here as, I think he's a trendsetter. Moving forward, whenever anything displeases me, and particularly if it's something pretty minor, I'm just going to declare the spirit of Jezebel.
Oh,
so like, yeah, like if I'm at McDonald's and my fries come and they're like not quite as warm as I'd like them to be, or particularly if they're undersalted, bam, spirit of Jezebel, just like that.
Is this like when Michael Scott declared bankruptcy?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Except whenever I run across anyone who is in better shape than me, which is a large list of people, like if I'm in by the Chicago lakefront in the summer and there's somebody who's in excellent shape, you know, going for their daily run with no shirt on because it's 95 degrees and they're, you know, they're very, very lean. I'm just going to start yelling Spirit of Jezebel at them. Or better yet, I'm going to text an unrelated third party that someone's doing a Spirit of Jezebel and they must be stopped.
Yeah.
Matt, I want you to do that with like your feet together, back straight, arm pointed at them, and in a Glaswegian accent with your full beard.
I'm not sure that all four of those things combined wouldn't just constitute a hate crime.
Speaking of the Presbyterians.
Yeah, or just me absolutely getting my ass kicked. And it would be very confusing for that person as well, because I would be like, I agree. You didn't know you were part of a bit, but I shouldn't have done that in public. And absolutely, no, I'm on your side. Just wandering into Loyola Hospital in the north side of Chicago being like, I would like some help for these broken ribs, but first thing you need to know is I deserve for this. And that's the kind of clarity that we hope one day Mark Driscoll and all those Vizilk will gain. But until then, we'll keep just reporting on the insanity, and that will declare emergency off.
Not holding my breath. We might hope, but nope.
All right, and now we're going to move on to your fine questions. You have a question for us, you can find some links to get in touch with us in your episode description, or wait till the end of the episode and I'll give you those as well. First question comes in and says, I don't really feel any big pull to, quote, share the gospel with my friends. I think they would feel like I'm judging them and I just want to be their friend so I can convert them. And I would feel like I'm being rude. Is that okay or am I wrong? I think this is a great question. I know, particularly if you grew up in church, there's a lot of, you know, pressure to go out there and share the gospel and win people to the Lord. And you may have come back from a summer thing where it was, we're all going to go make it the most Christian high school that ever was. And how many people did you witness to today and all that? And then maybe you develop some level of social awareness that people like Mark Driscoll never developed. And you also look at the world around you and you go like, oh no, that's an odd conversation to have most contexts, which is true. So, Lee, obviously you've worked with a lot of young people over the years. You share the gospel with a lot of people over the years. Is there anything wrong with the way our friend is feeling, and how do they roll maybe the way they think about sharing the gospel into their life in a way that works for them?
Yeah, there is absolutely zero wrong with the way that you're feeling. And I love this question. I'm so glad that you had the courage to ask it. I grew up in a church context where it was like, okay, how many times did you witness this week? And by that, they mean, how many times did you make someone uncomfortable because you pressed, you know, the urgency of your faith on them or whatever?
How many times did you creep out someone you think looks like a Democrat this week?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was harder to spot the Democrats in the 90s.
We all grew up in the South. You can probably tell, dear listener. Yeah, man. I look, that whole thing, it's a thing that makes you feel bad about yourself. It's a thing that makes you feel like I'm not doing enough, you know. But what I would love to do for you is let's cover a couple basics, and then let's try to reframe this entire conversation. A couple basics would be these things. No one cares what you know until they know that you care. That's thing number one to understand. Matt's right. I've spent the better part of the last 22 years telling a lot of people the good news of the gospel, and that's saying the same thing in two different ways. Gospel means good news. The good news of Jesus. But I don't dare do that until I have gotten to a place where I feel like I'm in a good relationship with this person and they are curious about the good news that I have to share. I don't wrangle anybody or force anybody into any kind of conversation that they're not ready to have or that they don't appear to want to have. I care a lot about the dignity of the people that I work with. And so sometimes that means I'm in a relationship with somebody for years before we have a chance to have a conversation about the good news of Jesus. So no one cares about what you know until they know that you care. So I spend a lot of time hanging out with people. I spend a lot of time meeting physical needs. I spend a lot of time giving people rides or buying them meals or just listening or having conversations. So that's a really basic but important thing to understand about this question. The other thing that I would love to do is reframe the whole conversation. So you're talking about the fear of coming across as judgmental and all that kind of stuff. So what I would like to speak into that whole thing is let's take this whole thing out of the realm of religion or Jesus or church or anything like that. And let me ask you this. When you see a TV show or a movie that you really love, if you eat at a restaurant that you think is amazing, what is the experience like for you when you tell one of your friends about it? That's my whole question. Like, you eat at a brand new restaurant that just opened in your town and you loved that experience. What is your demeanor? What is your experience like when you go to one of your friends and you tell them about that restaurant? My guess is that your experience is like, yo, I went to such and such the other day and I ordered the this and that. And then my friend that I was there with ordered the other thing. And both of our dishes were amazing. The service was good. The ambiance was cool. They had a great playlist going. Man, I don't know what to tell you. This restaurant is a banger. I can't recommend it high enough. Or man, did you see that new show that's on, you know, whatever, Paramount Plus or, you know, Prime Video or whatever it is? This show is even, it's way cooler than even the trailer can come across as. Based on what I know about you, I recommend you watch this show. What you're experiencing and what you're sharing is you're sharing your joy. You're sharing the pleasure and the good experience that you had with something that you did, a restaurant that you went to or a show or a movie that you watched. The thing that I would encourage you about sharing the good news of Jesus is that's the way this should feel. It should not feel like a thing where you are making someone feel ashamed about themselves or you are making someone feel guilty about their whatever. The good news of Jesus is I have found that God loves me and wants a relationship with me and that absolutely nothing would stop him from going to the absolute extreme to make me part of his family. If I were to go to heaven right now and I were to go into God's house, I would find my picture on his wall and I would find a room with my name on the door and the covers turned down for me to be perfectly at home. I have found peace in a way that I never knew it was possible. I have found friends. I have found a community. I have found purpose in my life. And I have found so much comfort in the promises of Scripture. That's what I have to share with you. If that's not something that's interesting to you, that's totally cool. I love you, and I want to hang out with you, and I want to be friends. But man, you know, for the things that I've been through that have been difficult in my life, I have found a lot of peace and comfort and assurance in having a relationship with Jesus. That's my story. And if I get the open door and the opportunity to share that with you, I definitely want to share that with you. This is not about making you feel ashamed of yourself. This is not about judging your actions or your past. I have found freedom from my past. I have found a whole new kind of life that I could never have imagined. And it's amazing. And I would love to tell you more about it if you want to hear about that. It's, to me, it's the same kind of vibe as sharing with someone like your great recommendation of an amazing movie or an incredible restaurant or a city that you got to visit when you were traveling or whatever. It's, I'm sharing my joy and my positive experience with you because I care about you and I can't wait to tell you about it. This is not about pressure. It's not about guilt. It's not about shame. It's about me sharing my joy with you because I care about you.
I think that's a really, really great way to start off a very big and multi-layered question. And Jed, where do we go from there?
Well, I agree with everything that Lee said, and I am deeply reminded, this is a long time ago, of I was playing in a Christian band, and we got booked to play at a Christian venue. Like, everyone here is Christian, and it was one of these nights where, like, just nobody showed up. So, like, the concert starts, and it's the sound guy and the headlining band and my band. Like, we're the only people in the room, and we played our set. We were fine, and the headliner goes up, and they get about halfway into their set. And they do an altar call.
Stop it.
In the middle of this Christian venue. And the only people here are the sound guy who owns the venue. He's the venue owner. He's massively a Christian. And us, who are a Christian band, and these guys who are a Christian band, they do an altar call. And they do the full on, you know, if there's anyone here tonight that's not oh certain of their eternal destiny, we just... And so, yeah, man, like, if you... For the question asker, if you're thinking of stuff like that, and you're like, yeah, I don't want to be like that. I feel you. as the recipient of the really inadvisable altar call, I feel you, man. I get it. Let me, and this isn't a word that I've used in a while, but let me briefly share my testimony with you, because it's going to inform a little bit of kind of my personal take on this. So, I had a super unhappy childhood, and then, I had a super unhappy young adulthood. And then, I was in my kind of mid 20s, and I've been out of college for a couple years, and like stuff in life was going okay, but like, man, I was just super, super unhappy. And there were things that I really wanted to see work out in my life that were going nowhere. And I was just mad. I was mad at the world. I was mad at myself. I was mad at God. I was mad at everybody. But I reached a point of being just so unhappy and just so just low and discouraged and disgusted that for me, I'm not putting this on anyone else, but for me, I think I started to pray in a way that I had never prayed before. That basically boiled down to God, like, if you are actually there, I need something, because this is all kinds of awful and I hate it. And I don't really know exactly how to explain this, but you know, that's the peril of the human condition. God met me in that moment. And we've been friends ever since. And it's been really cool. It's hard for me to put into words how strongly I am not the person that I was, then. I've changed a lot, man. And I think what's interesting is that's not the same as saying, well, I found religion and then I changed. It's more that
I discovered a way for me that I could interface with a power greater than myself. And in the context of that team, I could take on challenges that I didn't realize I could take on, and I could approach things in a way I didn't realize I could approach them. And I could get help that I needed in all kinds of areas, and I could work on things that I needed to work on. And it's been very literally transformative. Again, like, am I not the person that I was? And anybody who knew me when I was 25 would be like, yeah, that's really true. Also, and as super grateful as I am for it, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for it, I'm also aware that what I just described is deeply weird. Now, let me tell you about something else that's deeply weird. I'm super into heavy metal. Like, last night, no lie, I went and saw a band whose name, the name of the band, they chose to name themselves this, is Thy Art is Murder. That's the name of the band. And it's Cookie Monster vocals that rah, 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 the whole time. I went through 3 hours of Cookie Monster vocals. And for me, it was great. I loved it. I had a blast. It was an awesome time. It was great. I'm so glad that I went. Worth every penny. Worth inhaling, I think, about a metric ton of fog machine smoke, but worth it. Loved it. Super great. But I can't emphasize this enough, and I know you know what I mean. Deeply weird. It's deeply, deeply weird to go listen to grown men make Cookie Monster voices and go, that's pretty cool. So here's the thing about that is, I'm not in any way ashamed of liking heavy metal. I just like it. And if I know someone where I'm like, hey, I think you're weird the way that I am, so I think you might like the Cookie Monster vocals, I will absolutely share with you my love of metal. In fact, I had a buddy with me at this show last night because I figured out a certain point, I think you're the same kind of weirdo that I am when it comes to grown men making Cookie Monster voices, so let's do this. He's like, yeah, we should do that. So very similarly, my faith journey, which is, you know, unique to me, I am grateful for it. I am proud of it. I also get that it's a unique thing. If I know you and I think that me sharing that story with you would be something that would be a benefit to you, I'm happy to do it. In the same way that if I know you and I think that you'd be into the super weird music that I'm into, I will tell you about that. But just like Lee is saying, I'm not trying to foist that on people of, you know, hey, I'm Jed, how you doing? I would like to tell you about my faith journey. That's probably coming on a little strong, man.
You were almost to the Cookie Monster vocals, and I love the idea of that sentence being in the Cookie Monster vocals.
But here's the one thing that I would offer for you to think about, just something to consider. When you think of your friends, they know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call.
You're a Christian. You're a person of faith. You try and model your life after Jesus Christ. They know. They're aware. Like, this is a really super messed up world. And I think people that are authentically trying to pattern their lives after Jesus, people who are truly doing that tend to come from a place of love and kindness and often positivity and whatnot. That's pretty rare. So if you exhibit any of those things, even a little bit, people have picked up on that. They know. I think that you will have to think through person to person and relationship to relationship when it makes sense to bring things up and when it makes sense to let them bring things up. But I think that figuring out how to share this part of your life authentically the same way that you would share any part of your life authentically is probably going to give you some good guidelines on how to proceed with this. We love you. We've got your back, and it's okay to just be the real authentic you. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. Again, there's particularly when you're young, I think, as a lot of our listenership is, there's a particular pressure to, because you're in a school, you're hearing these things about you're being on fire, and everyone has an opinion on your faith. Either you're bringing them close to the Lord, or they're persecuting you, and see you at the poll, and all that nonsense here in America. Here's I can tell you from 3 men who are profoundly adult in some ways, profoundly not in other ways, as you hear often on this show, but pretty entrenched in being the adult world. It doesn't really come up that often in a lack of context sense. So when you're young and you're in school or even college or even your first job, the thing that's missing for this type of conversation is context. I am not going to, at my job, start talking to clients about my belief in my own salvation, because I will get fired, because that is not a work conversation. I have some friendships, and maybe they're you're going to your concert friends, or they're you people you met in your neighborhood, and that is not a conversation for that friendship. As Jed pointed out, we live in America. Probably most of our listeners do. They probably know. Here's the other thing that informs all this. We make fun of with the Megan Famous Law stuff. People are for the most part pretty aware of Jesus. They've got a lot of baggage they bring to that personally, which may make that conversation very different, which is why you don't want to go half-cocked off into a contextless conversation about just kind of your own theological discoveries and underpinnings. That doesn't always go very well, because this person you're talking to has probably heard of Jesus before.
What Matt, don't we need to make him famous?
I think he's pretty good.
You
gotta
make him famous.
Pretty good Q rating. And not only is he pretty famous, everybody's had some experience with people who, at least with people who speak for him or claim to speak for him. And I'm sure that you adore your LGBT friend or maybe some other type of marginalized group. And you really have a beautiful heart and a well thought out idea for how you want to talk to them about your faith. Unless you've asked a lot of questions and done a lot of listening up to a certain point, that's not going to be an easy conversation for you to navigate. And is it a benefit to you or them or your friendship, or I would argue the kingdom of God, for you to just kind of jump into that with both feet? Probably not. People bring a lot of experiences and a lot of hurt and a lot of preconceived stuff to a conversation of particularly a straight white person trying to talk to them about Jesus stuff. So again, you're under no compulsion to share the gospel. There are people working on making disciples among all the nations, and we've really crossed a lot off the list, which is pretty good. But as we talk a lot about in the recent episodes about how there's whenever we're reading scripture, as Lee put it recently, we're a third party listening in on a conversation in the gospels that Jesus is having with other people. The fact that Jesus at the Pentecost told the people to go make disciples among all the nations does not mean that you have to go into math class and ask everyone how sure they are that their eternal soul would be saved if they died tonight. And then when your friend who is Catholic says, "No, I am Christian," you don't have to go, "But are you really? Because don't you pray to Mary? And isn't that idolatry in its own way?" Or whatever weird thing people were raised with. You can live a normal life and have conversations as they come up. If people know you're Christian and they feel that there's some curiosity they have about that or the way you do that over a long enough timeline, and again, things that the three of us who are a little bit older can speak to, that'll come up if they want it to come up. And there's no shortcut to that. There's no jumping the line on that. And again, this sounds like the voice of experience of someone who has tried that and it's gone badly. It doesn't go well when you try to just go ahead and skip to the converting you part. Jed, one more thing on this?
Just one more thing to think about that I think might help a little bit with kind of calibrating for a non-really uncomfortable conversation is to ask yourself, are you open learning spiritual truths from your friends?
Hello.
Yeah.
Because if you're convinced that basically they have no valid spiritual truths to share in any way, and that you have all of them, and your job is to basically talk them into all of them, that's going to be a tough conversation, man. It's almost certainly not true as well that your friends have nothing to teach you. Even if their perspective on what it means to be saved would differ pretty strongly from yours, that doesn't mean that they don't have wisdom to share on other things. And people know pretty readily when someone else is just listening long enough to deliver the next line on your agenda, as opposed to actually taking what they are saying seriously
and
considering its validity and its worth.
Another excellent, excellent point. And with that, we move on to our next question here. It comes in and says, how much does it matter who wrote books of the Bible? Like, if Paul wrote all the letters that are ascribed to him, or if Solomon actually wrote Proverbs? And from a very, very big picture question to a little bit more of a minutiae one, which I think is interesting as well. I think it's a really cool question. Lee, where do we kick off here?
Very cool question. My one of my daughters and I today were talking about the now defunct app Vine. You guys remember Vine?
Yeah.
We were talking about this Vine that my buddy Sam Bingham and I made, where we, because of the way Vine functioned, we were able to make him like fly on a broom through a living room, because you could just, you know, the way you could edit clips, it was amazing. It was so fun. I think Matt might have been there. But in any case, we were talking about the fact that that's now defunct. And that was such a fun thing. Such great content creation came out of that for like a couple years. Now it's gone. And it feels to me like we are in a world where there's so much that's being created that it explodes. It exists. It explodes. It disappears. It's over. And the scriptures are really interesting in a world like that, because the scriptures have been around for a long, long, long time. The thing that I would say to you on this question, it's such an interesting question, is, you know, first of all, I have my personal convictions about the specifics of this conversation, but I am in no way interested on fighting anybody about those. I don't want to, you know, bring up manuscripts or talk about authorship or get into the minutiae of all of the nerdery on any of those things. I have my personal convictions about the authorship of scripture and all that kind of stuff. But my question more broadly for you, back based on the question that you asked, is in a world where everything is so transient, so completely like it comes into existence, it may get popular, and then it disappears forever. And I had a moment's laughter or about it or whatever the thing is, with all the content that we receive and experience all day long. Is there something that ancient wisdom has to say to you that you would spend some time with and give some attention to? That's a great question. I think it's an important question. As far as the authorship, again, I have my personal convictions. I don't want to fight you about them, and I don't want to fight anybody else about them. But in a world where information is flying at breakneck speed and things come into existence and then fly out of existence so quickly, is there something that ancient wisdom has to say to me that it would behoove me to like slow down and take some time with and understand? There's a tenet in scripture, which is to love your neighbor. One of my approaches recently to the scriptures has been to love my ancient neighbor.
Mm.
I don't understand everything about their context. I don't understand everything about their culture, but I think it's worth it for a body of work that has stood the test of time for me in my faith tradition, that I'm convinced is true and real. It's worth it for me to love my ancient neighbor and to take some time to slow down at the breakneck speed of my culture and to let their wisdom, you know, speak into my life, at times put me in my place, at times make me scratch my head and ask more questions, and to enter in further. So again, I haven't really answered your question. I've just... and I realize that. So please forgive me in that sense. But hopefully, those are some deeper waters for you to enter into and to say, like, hey, the scriptures are complex. This is not a black and white thing that I can, I can't flip a switch for you and say, and now you understand everything you need to understand about the scriptures, and now all of your questions are answered. I can't do that for you, and I won't. But I can just give you my personal, these are some of the things that I've been wrestling with lately and some of my personal convictions on this matter.
And I think it's a fantastic place to start it off. And Jed, where do we take things from there?
No, that's great stuff, man. So it's a good question. And another way to phrase your question is to ask, does scholarship matter? And the answer is, of course it does. You know, scholarship.
Spoken like a real nerd, Jed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, as someone who's glad, for example, that, like, you know, we've got penicillin now. So, like, if I get a, you know, an infection, I don't, you know. Like, scholarship's good. It's a good thing. We need nerds. But I think it's worth acknowledging that while scholarship, of course, is valuable and, of course, can make our lives better, that it does have its limits, and particularly here. And here's why, is there's a huge difference between knowing the stuff in theory and having lived it out. And we all know that, right? Like, you can read a cookbook. That doesn't mean you know how to cook. Cookbook's super helpful, but, like, you got to actually cook that food. And as someone who, I'm no great chef by any stretch, but I've done a fair amount of cooking in my life. Man, there's a big gulf between reading that recipe and actually, you know, bringing home a dish people want to eat. Those are not guaranteed to be the same thing.
Yep.
So, same thing if you've ever needed to repair your car, you get one of those, what, like the Hayes manuals. You know, I mean, yeah, you can buy the manual. You can, you know, read it a little bit. That doesn't mean you actually know how to successfully replace your brake pads. There are kinds of truth that have to be lived. In fact, there's a great quote from a writer named Hermann Hesse that says, truth is lived, not taught. And I think that really applies to the spiritual. You know, so Lee said that he's encouraging you to take the time to listen to your ancient neighbor who might have some wisdom for you. And I agree. And then I would join him in encouraging you to begin to figure out what it means for you to live that out. Jesus said that you should not only love your neighbor, you should love your enemy. Man, that's a hard call. And I would be really hard pressed to tell you what that's going to mean in your life. But I do know that Jesus for sure said it. Now, this is an interesting example because, for example, my understanding is that the Synoptic Gospels are broadly considered to have all been drawn from another text that's commonly referred to as Q, that has been lost to antiquity. I think I have that right. So who exactly wrote the Synoptic Gospels? Given that it's probably drawn from an earlier text, I mean, it's a little this, it's a little that. But here's the thing. Jesus definitely said to love your enemy. And now you got to figure out what to do with that. Someone may come along and do some archaeology and tell us the answer to those questions. That's cool, and I'd love to know. It'd be fascinating. But still, Jesus said to love your enemy. And
we're not squirming out of that one.
Yeah, yeah. Believe me, I've tried. I'm squirm motivated in that case. So, like, but I think that's the thing, man, is truth is lived. It's not taught. And it's going to take you a lifetime. It's going to take me a lifetime to figure out what it means for us to live out those calls to do justly and love mercy and walk humbly with our God. And scholarship is useful and it's valuable and it's got some things to teach us, but it doesn't change the fact that those are things that we ultimately learn by living them.
Very, very well put. Love that from both of these guys. With that, we're going to move on to our final question. Here it comes in and says, when I'm drawing a boundary with someone, how much is it on me to explain things clearly? I feel like people sometimes act like, oh, how was I supposed to know, as a way to make me doubt myself. How do I know when I have done enough? I think this is another really cool question. I love the practicality of it. And yeah. Lee, where do we kick off here?
Yeah, this is good stuff. I mean, you know, if you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you've heard us talk about boundaries. Real quick summary again, it's you know, there's never too much going over this ground because it's so critical and so important. A boundary is something that you set in a relationship that determines your behavior. It's not so that you change someone else. It's not so that you change someone else's behavior. You are communicating what you will or won't do. As per your specific question, you know, when you're talking about like, you know, am I communicating this well? How much do I need to say? How much detail do I need to give or whatever? There's a lot of interesting stuff in that question. The thing that I would tell you is the most critical thing when you have set a boundary is that you consistently maintain your behavior on what you have said you will or won't do. That is the most critical element. If you waver or buckle on your behavior based on their behavior, on what you will do based on what they do, after whatever you've communicated, that is where everything becomes muddy and confusing and unstable. People have talked to me for years, because I have almost all of my children are grown at this point. Two-thirds of my children are adults. And that is a bizarre thing to say and to realize. But Christy and I are almost retired as parents. We have almost entered the phase where our children are just people that we have friendships with, and we hope they come home as much as they want to. We absolutely love them, and we hope to hang out with them as much as they feel comfortable hanging out with us. But one of the things that people ask us about a lot because our children are old is disciplining children who you are the parents of. And the number one thing that we tell them is, your consistency with whatever you have communicated is the most critical thing. It communicates dignity. It communicates clarity. All of that stuff is absolutely implicit in boundaries. Whatever you've communicated, just make sure that you carry out what you have said you will do. You know, it's not for me to determine what your boundaries are, but whatever you've said they are, make sure that you carry out your behavior based on that. That's the most critical element of the boundary. Outside of that, it's like a reservation that a restaurant didn't respond to or whatever. It's like there is no stability. There is no place where we can understand how this goes. So that's my advice for you, is that when you're in a relationship with someone, especially with someone who's a manipulator, if you haven't been consistent, then they will take advantage of that. Like they will clamp down on that as this is a chance for me to confuse you with some kind of circular argument or whatever. But if you have been consistent on the boundary that you've set, that's the kind of clarity that you need to demonstrate.
That's a fantastic point. Jed, where do we close this out?
No, I love that for sure. I just want to key in on the final part of the question. How do I know if I've done enough? Because that's something when you're dealing with kind of messed up relationships and broken relationships, that's something that can really get in your head and really mess with you. And so I feel that for sure. There's an old phrase that I bet you've heard before, and the phrase goes, there are none so blind as those who will not see. There are a lot of people in this world that are determined not to see certain things. There are a lot of people in this world that are determined not to hear certain things. And if they're determined not to see it, they won't. And if they're determined not to hear it, they won't. So what does that leave us with? It is on you to explain things well enough that you can tell yourself, I've been clear.
Yeah.
Let me say that again for you. It is on you to explain things well enough that you can tell yourself, I've been clear. That's it. And the reason that that's it is there's a lot of bad actors in this world for all kinds of reasons who respond to everything by acting confused and ignorant. Like, what do you mean? I don't understand. What do you mean? No, you do. You don't want to understand, but you do. given that that's a coping strategy and a very maladaptive one, but a coping strategy for quite a few people, there's actually no level of clear explanation that can dispel that particular magic. And that actually leads to something that is a little bit broader than your question, but given what you're dealing with is really super important that you have in mind and that I have in mind and that all of us have in mind is there are no magic words.
Mm.
There are no magic words that make a problematic person repent. There are no magic words that make a hurtful person become aware that they're being hurtful and regret what they've done. There are no magic words that can thread the needle just so that this completely destroyed relationship just springs to a new life and a new vitality with health and vigor. Like, I wish there were. I'm not telling you something with any sense of relish here. Like, I really wish there were magic words. I think all of us on the show are the kind of people where we would desperately try to find them if we thought they existed. But they don't. There aren't magic words. At the end of the day, all you can do is the best you can. And that's kind of a loaded phrase unto itself, because what does it mean to do the best that you can? I'm actually going to introduce something that I got from a fitness instructor recently that's been banging around in my brain that I think is really valuable and applies here, which they were leading a class and they said, I want everybody to give their full effort, but I want to tell you what I mean by full effort. I want you to give this everything you've got, provided that you are being safe and you are using proper form and you are maintaining a good attitude. Mm. Think about that for a second.
I'm not sure I've ever done all three of those things at the same time.
Well, I think that's revealing, right? Because no one ever emphasizes doing those three things at the same time. Like, I'm actually going to try, like, I'm actually going to put effort into this. But I'm going to be safe in the way that I do it, and I'm going to be, you know, smart and proper in the way that I do it, and I'm going to do it in a way where I'm able to have a good attitude as I do it. Like, that's crazy good advice for a lot of things in life, man. And it applies to your question here of, you know, how do I know when I've done enough? When you've put real work into communicating in a way that keeps you safe and that follows, you know, kind of the bounds of the social contract and basic good communication, and you've done it in a way where you're able to maintain a good attitude and you know, and positive mental health, you've done it. You've done it as much as can be done. You've done it as much as is reasonable. If they're choosing not to hear it at that point, they're choosing not to hear it. And that brings us back to the great stuff that Lee was talking about with consistency. But bottom line, you blaming yourself won't make any of this any better or any easier or any faster. When you have given it your full effort, as we just defined, you've done enough, and we can rest easy in that knowledge.
Yep, I think that's fantastic stuff. One thing I'll tack on the end here is another metric that you cannot use is whether they came around. Particularly if you're first running into the idea of kind of healthy relationship dynamics and setting boundaries and doing active things like that, there is, and I don't think it's necessarily through the fault of the people who are, you know, writing the book or giving the talk or whatever. There's this idea that you do it right. You got your formula, which is good to follow. You know, you say the thing, and then you give the context for which you're willing to continue on in a relationship, and then you go about what Lee was talking about with holding it. And I think there is a kind of a formulaic thing to that is a hard, the formula runs into hard reality when you do all that and the other person has no interest in changing, even though you have clearly and calmly laid out your specific issue and given them a path back and done it, you know, exactly the way that it was described to you. And then they go, I'm not gonna do that, and keep being manipulative in the ways Jed described. There's this idea of like, okay, well, I guess, to go back to Jed's cooking analogy from the previous question, I guess I didn't do the recipe right because this tastes awful. this cake didn't rise at all. I must need to go do a better job putting these ingredients together. And that's because when you're writing a book about boundaries or giving a talk or making a podcast about it, or however people talk about this, you cannot account for the infinite number of ways people will be weird within relationships.
Yeah.
You kind of give some best practices and a way that you hope it will go, and will give you the best chance of having a positive interaction out of a situation. But there's this idea, I think, that a lot of people fall into of, well, if it didn't end well, or it didn't come out to the outcome that I wanted, that must mean I need to do it better, or do it smarter, or do it harder, or and go, get back in there and try this around. But to Jed's point, you are the only one who can decide that you have done enough and call good enough on that and give yourself peace. Doesn't mean you have to do it perfectly, but it does mean that if you leave it up to the other party, there's a reason you're drawing the boundary with them. So if you leave it up to the other party's either words or actions to decide if you did a good enough job, that is not a winning game, and that's not what we want for you. So with that said, we are going to say goodbye here. Thank you so much for listening. If you have a question for us, say at podcast@gmail.com. We're going to take out the song this week. This is from our friends in the band Something Epic. They're taking on Blessed Assurance. Take out that. Thanks for listening to this one. We love you. God bless you. There's nothing you can do about it.
My story. This is my